Hi, everyone. For our 25th episode, I thought we might try something a little bit different. Our first 24 episodes have featured really wonderful guests who got really personal in talking about their experiences as biculturals and the ramifications of their upbringing on their current lives and professions. Today, I want to share some of the thoughts that I've gathered throughout this process, and I wanted to also send a special shout out to Žilvinas Brazauskas, who created completely new music for today's episode. Thank you for everyone who's been asking when the next episode would come out. It means a lot to me to know that you're interested, and the truth is that it's actually taken me quite a long time to wrap my head around what I've been thinking and to wrap my head around what I'd like to say myself. From the moment that I decided to start making this podcast together with Žilvinas, I realized how little I know about culture. In the sense that I realized that I hadn't read nearly enough, I didn't know nearly enough about different kinds of cultures, how they interact with one another, the origins of countries, and the idea of how we got to where we are today in terms of having governments and countries that interact with one another as political entities. So it's been a long, almost year of reading and learning and listening and watching and trying to understand better what this thing is that I've always called and identified as biculturalism. I think that one of the biggest takeaways from this project has definitely been getting to know people who had so much more in common with me than I could have imagined. And it was really interesting. Toward the first few episodes, I'd been having a conversation with my brother, and he was saying that he just had no idea how much more public and global this private experience that he'd had and that we'd had growing up was for him. And I thought that was a really good way to sum up also my experience in these conversations. I mean, there are people who have had experiences reading the same comic books that we've had. There are people who have had experiences changing from one country to another. People who have had trouble adjusting and adapting to new norms, and people who've had to find ways to navigate talking to their family at home behind closed doors and also in public. And it's been interesting to see how many different kinds of solutions there are to problems that just occur when our parents come from different places. It's also been really interesting throughout the editing process to listen to the human voice. So it's been really interesting to see how people form their thoughts. And it's definitely something that I would recommend to all of our listeners, if you ever have a chance to listen back to yourself. I think we learn a lot along the way on these kinds of exercises. It has been tough to think about what is coming next for this kind of podcast, in the sense that there are so many different ways of moving forward with culture. And I'd really like to find ways to answer kind of the big questions, as in, what parts of culture really exist? In what ways is culture shallow, and in what ways is culture deep? I know that culture has been manipulated so many times throughout human history, just because if there's one question and multiple answers, it's pretty easy to gather consensus around dehumanizing those who have come up with a different answer. So it's something that's very clear to me that culture has been weaponized, but I wonder to what extent and in which ways and what kinds of things we could find out by looking at different episodes in history through the lens of culture wars, I guess. Another question would be understanding where the limits of one's own personality are and how they interact with the environment. The question that came up a couple times throughout these interviews has been, you know, what would have happened if I'd grown up in the other country of the other parent? How would I have been different? And yeah, these are really fascinating questions that I wish I had answers to and that I'd really like to look into in future episodes. One thing that I really wanted to make sure that I got to today in this episode is just talking about the sources and the information that I've gathered throughout this year, because there have been some amazing books and one amazing podcast in particular that I'd really like to point out. I think I've recommended it to all of my friends individually, but I'd like to recommend it to all of you as well. It's called Seeing White from Scene on Radio by John Buin and Chandrai Kumanika. And they do an excellent job of looking at historical underpinnings of essentially the transatlantic slave trade, but race in America and the ramifications of that slave trade through Jim Crow, through the 60s, right into right now. And that was actually a series that was made several years ago, I believe 2017 or maybe 2016. And it was absolutely current, absolutely relevant. And it taught me a whole lot about how race is really the quintessential way of baking in cultural differences in order to make economic and political gain. And it was really striking to me how they addressed race as being something very, very tangibly legal, and how they discussed Supreme Court cases that established precedent for what race was and what race wasn't. Because race was this devil's pact in the United States in order for Europeans from different provenances to come together and make an us. And it's really fascinating because I think all people all over the world have been touched by these categories of race that were made absolutely for profit and absolutely with an agenda. But then they have rippled back into how the world sees itself. And I guess, I mean, white people are colonizers. So just this concept of race has cut through so many different facets of history. And it's really interesting how even today there's not clear education and there's not clarity on the really childhood education, high school level of understanding why those categories were made and moments they were baked in and why that matters today. I think that it makes a big difference where one is coming from, and it makes a big difference what one has been told. I mean, we had one episode in which a guest told me that he'd actually been discouraged. Well, he'd been told that he couldn't call himself white because one of his parents was Asian. And so these things, I think that we're living in 2021 with a lot of relics, and we're living with a lot of fossils from bygone eras that were made with pretty brutal motivations and intentions. So I definitely think that not only do we need to have a conversation about race and about equality and about exploitation, but we just need to have a conversation about what is race and to what extent is it real. Seen on Radio, the podcast I was talking about, sums it up pretty well in the sense that race is a historical legacy. Race exists because people were divided into it and were then treated accordingly. And among generations, things developed according to this man-made construct, which means that now, today, we're living with the aftermath of race, but race itself doesn't exist. So, I don't know, these things have made me think a lot and talk a lot and discuss a lot. I'd also like to mention two more books that really touched me. One was called Learning from the Germans by Susan Neiman. And this book is also, it's really quite amazing. I think she did the thing that a lot of us have probably thought about throughout the years, which is to compare what happened in the aftermath of the Second World War with what happened in the aftermath of slavery. And it's a mammoth task. And she did an extraordinary job of raising a lot of important questions and raising a lot of awareness. Really did the work. Spent a lot of time in Mississippi, lives in Berlin. And I really recommend. I think that that book is really important in understanding the role that Germany has played in the world in the 20th and 21st, more than anything, century, since the fall of the wall, really, for the last 30 years. Germany has been the country in the world that has modeled a public stance of repentance. And that's pretty, pretty unique. And I know that a lot of people, well, it's funny because I was listening recently to an episode of a podcast, I think it was Hidden Brain, in which they were talking about how a lot of times kids extrapolate like very small scale lessons when they're trying to be taught a large scale story. So they were talking about how there had been a Sesame Street episode where some kids had been watching an episode about bullying, and they'd been asked what the moral of the story was. And the kids had said that the moral of the story was, you shouldn't be mean to Big Bird. And when they were asked if there was any other bigger moral, all the kids could come up with was, well, maybe you shouldn't be mean to large yellow birds. And a lot of times it really takes a leap of faith to draw larger conclusions. I think that a lot of times people think about Germany as a unique case, and they think about how, yes, Germany has showed public repentance because what they did was uniquely evil and no other country would be capable of perpetrating such evil. But I think that's really not true. And I think we have a lot to learn from the only country that I know of that to that extent has been public about their feelings. I think, of course, the United States is pretty high up on that list, and I think it's absolutely possible. I think a lot of times we think about these giant tasks and impossible seeming tasks, and we almost, well, a lot of people try to make the point that taking on these huge tasks or calling for accountability is anti-American in the sense that it's just self-hatred. But on the other hand, what I really, really enjoyed about Niemann's work is taking things apart and showing that it's not at all self-hatred. It's actually a form of self-love to believe in one's nation to the extent of thinking that change, an important change, is possible. So I would really, really recommend that book. I thought it was excellent. Yeah, and another book that I was reading a couple of months ago is called Shtetl by Eva Hoffman. And it talks about one small shtetl in Poland. And it talks about the Jewish population there and obviously how they were ultimately exterminated, but the ups and downs of this kind of cosmopolitan nature of this really, really small town that had ethnic Poles and ethnic Jews together, and the case study of what it can mean to have different people together and how the different groups saw one another and how they saw one another's worship and their eating and their daily lives and their habits. And I think it's really interesting for anyone who cares about what it can be like to have a bicultural identity. I think it doesn't have to be within one. It can also be around one. And I definitely learned a lot about how different groups of people behave and how things can go well and how things can go very, very badly. So I would recommend that book as well. Yeah. I think when I set out to start this podcast, probably the most important thing that I wanted to focus on, also just because there's so many different directions one could go in, is the idea of a person who has two parents who come from a different language, essentially, and culture as well. But I've been really fascinated in how having two languages can shape the brain and also the experience that we talked about with many different guests. I'm thinking about Louisa Weiss, is this idea of going to the other parent's country and all of a sudden seeing this other reality where everyone speaks this other language and where the one parent who had always been in the minority was all of a sudden in the majority. And I think that's a really, really special moment. It can be also a little bit overwhelming, I think. But it's been really interesting to talk to people who have had this moment early on or even later on, thinking about, for instance, Shano Pueblo. And then what it means to continue life after having seen these two different ways of being. That's something really fascinating, and what that brings then to the table when we're sitting in a room with people who maybe haven't had that experience, and knowing that somewhere else things are completely different. Just that knowledge. That's been a really interesting place to start. I think one thing, though, that I've learned very clearly is that things are not nearly as clear-cut as that. And to watch how languages change, how cultures change, how things shift, how the geographic or the political boundaries of nations are so volatile, and how they're always changing, and how the balance of power is so tied up into things all the way down to the smallest cultural traditions that we love and that we cherish, like how even those traditions have been used throughout history to show people that a certain group of people belongs in a certain kind of land, and or that a certain group of people has a superior culture that they need to bring to other places. It's just been interesting to think that these little sources of inspiration and of interest that I have really felt like I was discovering have already been used time and time again throughout the centuries. That's been kind of a jarring but really interesting discovery. Another area where I got some clarity was the kind of the three reasons why people leave to go somewhere else. And I'd say that those three reasons are necessity, opportunity, and curiosity. And it's been an important experience for me to see all three of them. I think that definitely where I'm living now in Germany, it's definitely out of curiosity. I know that my mom moved to the United States for opportunity to some extent. And a lot of people that I know and a lot of biculturals that I know move for opportunity because they realize that their skill set is best suited somewhere else, or that they can be appreciated more in a different country. And, well, that's definitely also what happened to the Jewish side of my family. I mean, they were able to be valued and appreciated so much more when they left Eastern Europe and went to the United States. So that's probably where a lot of bicultural stories start, with parents who move for opportunity. But it's been also really interesting to talk to people whose parents move because of necessity. And I would like to do more of that, because that absolutely is an integral part of shaping our understanding of the world today, and like the migration crisis that's going on in Europe, and the war, and the borders in the United States. There are a lot of people that are coming over to different countries for necessity, and a lot of times those stories also end up with bicultural children, and that has a different level of trauma and of difficulty that I think is absolutely separate and at the same time also belongs to the story of being bicultural. I think probably the most ambitious or radical thing that I wanted to do with this project is to remind us how much we have in common with people as biculturals. I was once in a car with someone, and he was taking me to a concert because I'm a cellist. And while we were in the car, we were talking, and I asked him where his parents were from. And he said, like, yeah, well, my dad is from Belgium, but my mom is from Poland. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, my mom is from Italy and my dad's from the United States. And we were talking about some different things. And then after he dropped me off where I needed to go, I found out that he was a member of the royal family, which was really funny for me because of course, class plays a huge role. And in a lot of cases, it plays a lot bigger role than culture. And that's one of the things that when I started this podcast, I started thinking, like, why am I focusing so much on culture? Class ultimately determines people's life experience far more and to a far greater extent. But at the same time, he also has the same experience that I have of being in one reality and being in a different reality and being able to understand, to physically understand words and sentences and sentiments that people around him can't. And I think that it reminds me of something, yeah, I think I talked about this in a different episode, still with the royal family. I think it was in Britain, and someone was writing about how impressive it was that William and Kate's daughter could speak several languages. And then someone posted a comment saying, like, so does every immigrant, but nobody cares. And I think that's absolutely true and very, very important for us to remember both the connection and also the responsibility toward other people who are bicultural. And that a lot of times this is something that doesn't hinge on anything else. It doesn't hinge on which two cultures or which three cultures, and it doesn't hinge on any other factors. But this level of connection, empathy, but also the experience of having been disconnected or disjointed and trying to find unity. A lot of times in situations in which you might be the only person who can bring that unity because you have access to a different. I guess that doesn't make as much sense as I wanted it to make, but we've all been in situations in which we're the only person who could possibly act as an interpreter and having to kind of overcome our own insecurities of not doing a perfect job or not being trained or not being the right person, because that's all the situation has to offer. And I think that that's something that we should make sure that we're doing not only in a pinch and an emergency, but all the time and as much as we can. Another thing that I wanted to touch on is language. It's something that has also been like a big topic this year. I remember when I was reading Anna Karenina for the first time that I couldn't believe that in Russian men's last names and women's last names end differently. And it's the same thing in Lithuanian. And I remember thinking, like, how could it be that I could have a different last name from my father or from my brother? And that had been one of those rules that I'd always taken as kind of an iron rule, as something that could never change. And it was really kind of mind-blowing for me to see that that is possible. And I think that's something that I've learned is, yeah, it's like we're all playing the same chess game, but different cultures have different rules. And once you've understood what other rule might be applicable, everything else continues as normal. And I think it's been interesting for me, especially when I've talked to people who spoke two languages that were actually quite similar, as in from the same group. I don't want to say like Spanish and Italian, but let's say German and Dutch. And a lot of times people, the human brain is wired to kind of settle in on the differences. And it's been interesting for me how sometimes the guests and how sometimes I myself kind of see straight past all the similarities. And one thing that I love about learning languages is that it's all about finding the way to have things click into place and to find the way in which certain laws and rules that might not apply to one language do apply to the other, and having applied them to see how everything, just clarity appears. That's something that's really cool.
So, of course, with the monologue style episode, I have gotten the chance to listen back, and I wanted to comment on a couple of things before wrapping up. Going back to this idea of curiosity, opportunity, and need as motivators for someone to leave their country of birth. Well, my own family did emigrate from Eastern Europe at the turn of the century, so right at the border between what is opportunity and what then very quickly became need. And of course, every bicultural story starts with at least one parent, if not both, who left their country for one of those reasons. And that really does play quite a strong role in how people then see themselves, what their parents went through, and what their story was in terms of how they met. And, you know, when I came into this podcast, I had kind of a naive outlook in terms of thinking that self-love was a given within every family, and that things like racism and intolerance and prejudice didn't exist within couples. But upon a little bit of reflection, and definitely after listening to a lot of different stories and points of view, I've realized that, you know, at best it's a process, and that there can absolutely be internalized struggles that are coming from historical conflicts, and they can be baked into a couple, and they can definitely be something that a child struggles a lot to come to terms with. So that definitely opened my eyes. And something that I thought about a lot recently is nationalism. We think a lot about nationalism in terms of like the wave of nationalism that's sweeping the Western world. We think about, of course, Donald Trump. We think about Brexit, a lot of things that are going on in Europe. But it's been interesting for me throughout my reading and my talking, thinking just how much nationalism is a pretty recent phenomenon. And until really the world wars and the end of the 19th century, often power alliances had to do with marriages, they had to do with military expansion, they had to do with dynasties and families and inheritance of chunks of land. And it's really quite recent that we expect that national borders should reflect who lives within them. And that concept, even though it's, of course, very beneficial in many ways. I mean, if we think about post-European colonialism in the Middle East, and we think about all the countries that really have nothing to do with the people living inside particular borders. I mean, thinking about the Kurds, for instance, or in Africa, there are so many different countries that were drawn for political and strategic reasons and have nothing to do with culture. So, of course, it is progress in many ways to think about a country, the borders of a country, as representing a group of people. But of course, as we've seen in the 20th century, and we're seeing in the 21st as well, nationalism in its radicality and in its beneficialness to groups of people also has a lot of pitfalls. And going back to the book by Eva Hoffman Shtetl that I was referring to earlier, the Polish Commonwealth, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth actually, was a huge administrative chunk of land, and it was a big country that included many different kinds of languages and cultures and traditions. And it was only after Poland had been partitioned between Prussia and Russia for so long that the idea came that when Poland reemerged as a country, that it should be a country for Poles. And obviously that excluded other groups of people, Jews and other minorities, and Germans actually. There was a huge and very tragic story of Wolfskinder, German families that had been living in East Prussia, coming back with really, really horrible conditions. And of course, I mean, that happened to so many different groups throughout the 20th century, but it really came from this idea of the country for its people, which was
pretty novel in the 20th century that we take so quickly for granted in the 21st. And it's interesting then, because the bicultural person is coming right up against these two forces. So on the one hand, we have this idea that we can't fall into the pitfalls of nationalism because it's self-harm, first of all, but also because we have this point of view that there is, that culture in so many ways is shallow, and that right below culture lies the richness of shared humanity. So we have this kind of bridge builder on the one hand, but on the other hand, we're also seeing globalization and we're seeing a push toward languages being forgotten and cultures being forgotten and traditions as well. So like we were talking about in the last episode with Alexis, the idea of preserving languages and the idea of making sure that she was talking about Cape Verdean Criollo, but that many languages that don't have such an international presence, don't get dwarfed by English and maybe French and Spanish and these major languages. Like Josiah was talking about a couple of episodes ago, how many languages have been infiltrated with Spanish. I mean, the whole concept of Creole languages comes from Western European languages being infused into the languages of those who they colonized. So it's at the same time really, really important as much as possible to preserve the traditions that we inherit because of their uniqueness, while at the same time being hypersensitive to the fact that they have been, they can be, and they will be weaponized in terms of excluding people who shouldn't belong according to cultural purism. Now, at the risk of going on to a tangent a little bit, I was watching a documentary that Jovanas had sent me a while ago, and it had to do with these German groups that live in small villages and like make their own like clothes and food and are self-sustaining and live on the land. And it was really beautiful to watch some of the traditions that they were preserving. And then it took a really unexpected twist talking about how actually they are like far, far right, and that they're preserving these things because they believe that the German cultural and historic way is the superior one, and that globalism and capitalism are ruining everything and polluting, I guess, the essence of Germanness. And so it's kind of funny because we have this double-edged sword, and it's really important to remember as much as possible, because it helps explain to us who we are and why we are the way we are and how we got to where we are, in a much more personal level, instead of consuming products of media and general culture, which are not as distinct and are not as precious, but at the same time, linking back into the acknowledgement that every one of us has such stories that we hold dear to us. So yeah, those were a couple of extra thoughts that had been kind of going through my mind while I was listening. And I will go back to the original track to say goodbye. So this has been kind of an interesting experience for me. Just kind of sitting by myself in my usual podcasting place. I actually tried having a conversation with Jovanas, and it was really cool. But we ended up talking about things that were maybe a little bit more relevant for one another, and a little bit less to the point of the podcast. So I just wanted to get a couple of these thoughts out there. And definitely the 24 episodes that we've done so far have been therapeutic for me. They've given me a lot of time to think and a lot of ways of seeing things that maybe wouldn't have occurred to me. So that's been really, really great. And in terms of what's next, well, first of all, I really want to thank all of the people who have sponsored us so far. I want to thank Simen Feghan, who is our newest sponsor and was actually the guest of a couple of episodes ago. I think it's so cool that he decided to sponsor us, and it's been really wonderful getting to know him through the podcast and outside of it. So thank you very much, Simen. One way that you can contribute, if you'd like, is to let us know where you'd like to see the podcast go in the future. We are going to be taking a little bit of a break now, but we have a couple of wonderful guests who have already agreed to participate in upcoming episodes, and I'd like to go more into themes. So if you know of any themes that are interesting for you, that you'd like to see us go a little bit deeper into, things that relate to biculturalism, things that relate to culture, to language, I would love to hear about those. Also, if you would just like to become a supporter of the podcast, you can find us on Patreon. You can also email us. You can send in a one-time donation as well. That would really help, and it would make us know that you're out there and that you're getting something out of this and that you're enjoying this experience, which would mean a lot to me and Jovanas and Jesse too. So yeah, and one other thing that I want to focus on coming up is the ties between culture and culture. I think it's fascinating that the umbrella term of culture refers to both the arts and to civilization in general, to language, to ways of being. And I kind of want to look at unpacking that a little bit and seeing what role the arts have had in different civilizations and perhaps what roles biculturals have had in bringing kind of some cross-pollination in terms of culture to different civilizations. So that's something that's really interesting to me. If you have any other ideas, please let us know. You can email us at theextrahalf@gmail.com, or you can find us at anchor.fm. You can leave us a voice message there too. All right, everyone, take care and see you soon.